This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 81, Treating Mental Disease with Ayurveda. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. This month, I have been thinking a lot about mental health. There is so much going on in the world that is influencing our mental health in a negative way, and I want to bring a little bit of clarity from an Ayurvedic standpoint about what we can do to help treat this and how we can work with what we call the gunas, or the qualities of the mind or the soul. And so as we jump into this episode, I want you to just be really open-minded about yourself. Use this as a time for self-reflection, analysis. We often think of mental disease as something that is big that would require psychiatric care or treatment. The fact is, we all go through periods of mental disease because that dis-ease just means we are not balanced. We are not at ease. And so we can understand that there might be severities. There might be some kinds that do require some really advanced treatments within the homeopathic as well as the medical treatment system. But there's a lot of mental disease that we suffer from on a daily basis, and it's just a case of us forgetting our true nature as spirit. As soon as we do that, we are in a state of mental disease. We're not at ease with our own mind and our own soul. So let's do a little quick review here. I want to review the three gunas. These gunas are qualities or ways of being within the mind. And our guna is dominant at the time of conception, but this can change over time, right? You might have one guna that's dominant when you're born, but as you evolve and you grow, that guna becomes different and it evolves into a different and higher level of guna. The three gunas are sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is clarity, purity. It's this full awareness, this highest level of consciousness. Rajas is motion, action, and it's a little bit of awareness, but not at the high level of sattva. There's just so much still going on. Desire for clarity, but not a full reaching of clarity. And the final one is tamas, or ignorance, inertia. So when we have one guna that's dominant at the time of conception and it evolves and changes, we often look at it like a ladder, that we're moving from tamas to rajasic to sattvic. But the truth is, most of us kind of vacillate anywhere between rajas and tamas. There are some truly sattvic individuals who live at this higher space of awareness. They have no attachment to the dramas in life, but that's few and far between. The majority of us are still working towards bringing ourselves up to that higher state. If you listen to episode number 69, I talk a lot more about these gunas specifically. You can get a little bit more clarity there. So when we determine our dominant guna, we do this by looking at our repeated actions. Any person can have a moment of clarity, moment of excitement or drama, or they might have times of ignorance. But a dominant guna can be observed by looking at our pattern over time. What is our tendency over time? What do we do most commonly? What is our mental state most commonly? Because most people will appear quite sattvic when all is going well. There's no challenges in life. They have financial resources. They have health. Everything is good. And all seems well. They are like a calm, reflecting vessel of divinity. And then as soon as a challenge or a stress arises, that's where their true guna comes out. And so we want to really look for that. When you are challenged, what is your natural reaction? What is the natural way that you respond to that challenge? There are a few questions you might ask yourself that will help you to determine this. First, how do you react to stress? Do you become easily overwhelmed and scattered? Do you rise to the challenge and take it on? What kinds of things generate stress for you? These would be really good questions to take some time and really think about. How do you react when you have a stressful situation come up in your life? And that might be different than someone else, right? What I think is stressful may be different than what you think is stressful. But when you have this stress come up in your life or this challenge, are you getting overwhelmed? Do you get scattered in your thoughts? Are you able to rise to the occasion and you kind of go head first into the fray to take on this challenge? Now, people who have a vata imbalance tend to become quickly overwhelmed when stress levels rise. This can either create paralysis where they don't actually make any decisions or movement, or the feeling that you're running around in circles and getting nowhere. Lots of activity, no results. As the stress continues to rise, people with a vata nature or a vata imbalance will become less organized. They just can't keep up with it, right? They get very scattered. Others often have to step in and help them. Now, when a person of a pitta nature or a pitta imbalance tends to become stressed by having too much going on, too much activity, all these stressors coming in, they will amp up their work. They'll increase their output. They'll kind of rev up their engines. They might briefly feel overwhelmed, but then they're going to react to it by developing a plan, working harder, more efficiently, really getting in the trenches. So they both can respond initially the same way. They might go, oh goodness, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. But a vata is going to end up very scattered and disorganized. A pitta is going to double down. And they're going to take it even further and make even more things happen. Now, people have a pitta nature. That's why they have to be careful not to get burnt out, because they'll tend to take these stressful situations and say, no, I can do this. I'm up for this challenge. And then they'll do even more. If you're a kapha nature, you kind of tend to take stress in stride. You might continue to move slowly at your own pace, and it takes a lot of stress before it bothers them. I like to think of these as the volcanoes, right? I know we talk about pitta being volcano because of a heat, but when you think about a volcano, it sits dormant for a really long time. There has to be an extreme amount of pressure that's coming from the inner parts of the earth to push into this volcano to cause it to actually erupt. So before a kapha responds to stress, it requires a lot of pressure on them. So most of the time, they're going to just seem like everything's fine. They'll stay reasonably focused. They're just going to kind of be business as usual, get her done. So that's how the different doshas respond. Now, what about the gunas? Because the guna does not match directly with a dosha, right? The guna is the quality or state of your mind. And I know we have subtle doshas. If you want to understand and learn more about the subtle doshas, I talk about those in episode 11. But when we're talking about the gunas, these are kind of a higher level. It's there before the subtle doshas develop. So a sattvic individual does not become stressed, right? They see through the illusion of what would have stressed them out. They can be the observer and see that this thing that's creating great drama for many people in this scenario is actually not something to be upset about. They're fine. They can just move through it easily. Rajasic individuals are ones who are reactive to stress, and they get a lot more emotional about it. Tamasic individuals have two ways of reacting. The first way is by causing harm to themselves or others, right? Remember, tamas is a darkness, an ignorance, a heaviness. The second type of reaction appears to be very calm and inert. There's not a whole lot going on. They seem very unruffled by the stress. But rather than seeing through the stressors, they're actually denying that they even exist. If it doesn't exist, they don't have to be stressed out about it. So this is the statement of ignorance is bliss, because they are just blissfully going along, ignoring that there's even a problem. And that's because of a lack of awareness in tamas. Rajasic individuals are aware, but they aren't able to transcend that yet. They're still stuck in the chaos and the drama of the stress. Sattvic individuals are aware, can see it, but they have transcended. They've stepped outside of the drama. They're able to be an observer as opposed to actively being caught up in that drama. When we look at mental disease and mental illness, mental disease originates with having a lack of sattva or a lack of clarity in the mind. Rajas and tamas are really the cause of disease. When you have rajas and tamas in the mind, it causes a disconnection between the true nature of yourself as a spirit. So you lose that ability to see yourself clearly. You have a lack of clarity, and this causes an imbalance. The imbalance is perceived in your mind as a disturbing emotion. Okay, so you're having this imbalance. Rajas and tamas are running the show. You have this emotion that rises up, a difficult emotion, and these emotions are showing up as disturbances in the subtle doshas, prana, tejas, and ojas. As a quick review, prana is the subtle dosha that mirrors vata. Tejas is the subtle dosha in the mind that mirrors pitta. And ojas is the subtle dosha in the mind that mirrors kapha. So these first are disturbed, right? And then they ultimately will lead to an imbalance in the physical body in vata, pitta, and kapha. Everything happens spiritually first. So it's important to understand this, that these gunas, these qualities that we come with when we are conceived, even though they can change over time, they have a huge impact on how we're manifesting in the subtle doshas and in the doshas themselves. It doesn't mean that our prakriti is changing, but the way they're manifesting will shift. So when we get to a state of higher consciousness, we are more in that sattvic state consistently, we're able to manifest the most positive aspects of the doshas instead of getting into states of imbalance. when we're dealing with psycho-spiritual healing within Ayurveda, the most important thing that we can do is increase sattva or cultivate sattva. The basic way we do this is through proper diet and lifestyle. That's what's so interesting when we look at the major span of mental disease or mental upset that can be happening, anything from depression to anxiety to anger to bipolar to ADHD, all of these things that we can experience within the mental spectrum can all be healed by coming back to proper diet and lifestyle. This is because it creates clarity in your mind. And so when we have clarity, our memory of our true nature as spirit is restored. We're able to act harmoniously. It's like we've been empowered because we can see truth. And when you can see truth, you can act in that truth. So it leads to psychological and physical healing. This is a more sometimes slow way to heal. And so when we go through the body, it seems to be faster. What's interesting is that what we do to heal the body is also healing the mind. What we do to heal the mind heals the body. So it can work both ways. Now, we don't always want to cultivate sattva. I know that sounds a little contradictory based on what I just said. A tamasic individual, someone who has this heaviness, this inertia, this darkness to the mind where they're really not seeing clearly at all. I've used an analogy before of a lake and there's lots of turbulent waters. It's like there's mud being kicked up from the bottom and they can't see clearly. There's no ability to reflect divinity. For them, they're not going to do well if you try to have them go straight to living sattvically. It'd be similar to trying to push a rock up a hill with a feather. It's not going to move. And so you have to instead give them rajasic practices. You got to get them into movement and awareness first. So we're taking them from a state of ignorance, of unawareness, and helping them to get action, motion, and awareness. And so that's our first step with them. When you're agitating rajas, it's going to motivate and move that inertia of tamasic energy. And so when you're in that motion, light might be splintered and distorted, but spiritual light is going to be able to come into their awareness. They'll have moments of aha, moments of lightness where they have a little bit of clarity. And so we use rajasic therapies to treat tamasic disorders. When we want someone to move from rajasic to sattvic, that's where we can really focus on sattvic practices. Rajasic people already have an awareness. It's fleeting. These are people who tend to work towards self-help. They like to study themselves. They're constantly trying to grow and progress and evolve. So they realize there's something bigger than them at play in the universe, that there's something bigger than this physical existence, but they're having a hard time stepping away from the dramas of life. I know for myself, that is a space that is really common for me to be in. Right? I get caught up in the dramas of life and I have a hard time separating myself from them. So a rajasic person can take on sattvic practices to help to increase that clarity. It's like a way of purifying that rajas and kind of calming it down. So when we have a rajasic or tamasic imbalance, we also look at those subtle doshas, the prana, tejas, and ojas. So going back and listening again to episode number 11 so you can understand those and how they work is really helpful because we're going to focus on keeping those balanced to one another. Right? We want those subtle doshas. They don't have a constitutional balance that was set at conception, but we want them in ratios comparative to one another. So if they were on a bar chart, they would all be at the same level. So that's how we work with those three. As I started down this Ayurvedic path, I was truly in that rajasic state of mind. I spent a lot of time in agitation, a lot of time in judgment, in motion, constantly moving, and having a hard time just stabilizing that. And I knew that there was more, but I felt like this was the vital urgent things of my day and I had to deal with those. I couldn't spend my time thinking and worrying about the higher spiritual aspects of who I was, of the world, of existence, of moving forward in that because I felt like it would take a lot of time. It would be this full study. Like I'd have to go live in an ashram and be a complete Ayurvedic monk guru and do nothing except for study Ayurveda. I didn't understand how to be in the world living Ayurveda and also be outside of that space and becoming more evolved. And so finding that marriage between the two is part of being human. We have to balance the requirement to pay the bills and take out the trash with this desire to meditate and have transcendent moments. And so you just sneak them in. As a mom with four kids, it's something I've just had to figure out how to fit it in. One of the biggest things that's helped for me is the in-between moments. We often look forward to the end of something or the beginning of something or when we'll be through something. Right now I'm in clinical Ayurveda studies, so I might keep looking forward to when I'm done with this. But it's these in-between moments where we evolve and we can move from Rajasic into Sattvic. If you're listening to this podcast, you're most likely on a Rajasic state, moving towards Sattvic or somewhere in between. Perhaps you've already reached a Sattvic state where you stay there, and that is now your dominant guna. And so for those of us who are still working between Rajasic and Sattvic, and I would put myself in that category, we're still playing that seesaw, that teeter-totter between being fully evolved and immersed in the physical and then working into transcending that and coming more to the spiritual. But it doesn't take the time that I thought it would. I can still live a normal physical life and be working towards this higher state of evolution. And we do this through the five senses, as well as a proper lifestyle. So everything I teach within Ayurveda is going to bring us more closely aligned with that Sattvic state. And then looking at how can I involve my five senses? How can I do therapies that are going to treat my senses? Things that I like to do on a daily basis is get out in nature. The more time that you can spend in nature and get that vibration inside you, it's going to allow for peaceful, harmonious impressions to enter your consciousness. When you're out in nature, all five senses are being stimulated. You're breathing in, and then you're tasting the scent that you're breathing in. You're seeing nature. You're hearing nature. Your feet are touching the earth. Your hands are touching the plants. Everything is involved and engaged. For myself, a weekly sabbatical to the mountains is a requirement for mental health. That might mean going for a hike in the morning. Sometimes it means going for a moonlit hike with my dogs in the evening. It might mean going for a bike ride up in the mountains, but it's always an involvement and engagement with earth and with nature. If we don't have time to get away for that long, you can open your window and breathe it in. You can take a walk outside, go around your block. If you work in an office building, you can go outside and find a little patch of grass to sit on at lunch, let the sun soak down on you. There's so many ways that we can involve nature more in our everyday. So that's my invitation to you, is find out how you can do that more. Meditation is something else that has just transformed everything for me. I always envision meditation as being this very intense, time-consuming practice. And the beauty about it is the more that I've meditated, the more I've wanted to meditate. And so taking more time as I sit and I breathe doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like one more thing to do. It feels like a blessing. And 20 minutes will fly by. And then I'm suddenly ready to move on to something else. And I can't believe the time has passed. I'm almost sad. Like, oh no, I want to keep going. I don't want to be done with meditation. So when we get into that stillness, it helps us to see past the illusions that we are believing are true. We're able to connect more deeply with spirit. It's like a way of stepping outside of the physicality and realizing that our bodies aren't all there is. The next path or the next thing we can take is yoga. So there's four different paths within yoga: karma, bhakti, raja, and janene, that will all help to cultivate sattva. So these four different paths, raja yoga, exists simply for this purpose of bringing us to a higher state of consciousness and to help us live a sattvic life. And so this is Patanjali, the Yoga Sutras, Ashtanga Yoga. So all of that is part of raja yoga, the royal path. Raja yoga is beautiful because it focuses on calming the mind. When our mind is calm, that's when sattva can rise. It occurs by a proper lifestyle, breath practices, asanas or physical poses, and meditation. So when we're able to calm our mind, the illusion is lifted and we again see our true nature as spirit. Do you see the common thread here? The way to sattva is recognizing true nature as spirit. And the way to sattva is these practices. And they're not huge and big. Right? You don't have to go out and live and meditate with monks on a mountain, although maybe that would be faster and easier way to be sattvic, but you have to be able to do it within a normal life. Another aspect is to avoid the influence of the media. Television, screens, anything that you put in front of your face like that is very rajasic. It disturbs our minds. When these images are changing as they move across the screen, we're seeing the images as us. If there's something violent, fearful, angry things happening, we actually have a reaction inside of us where our feelings think that that's happening to us. They cannot tell the difference between an imagined event and a real one. And so our body's responding to the imagination, even though that's fake. It's not even real. And so it's really smart to reduce the amount of time that you spend exposed to media, especially visual images, because it will influence the sattvic nature of your mind. And typically it brings it down to a lower plane. The other day I was with my sisters and we were watching a trailer for a Desperate Housewives or Real Housewives. I live in Salt Lake City and they're doing a Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And my sister said, oh, did you know they're doing that here? And so they pulled it up. Within a minute and a half, there was a dark, just heaviness that came from just seeing this trailer and the way that these people were treating one another in a very Tomasic, Rajasic way. And we turned it off. And then we put on some music that was much more uplifting. It had good harmonies in it. And it was a message that was very clear and spoke to the truth of spirit. And the almost immediate change in the energy and the way it felt in the space was tangible. It went from this feeling of that heavy, it was just a real negative emotion. There wasn't a lot of light coming from that trailer we watched. And then instead, when we switched to something else and we were listening to this music, it brought a clarity of mind. It's like it cut through the illusion that we had previously watched and allowed us to move into a higher state of vibration. And I felt a lot better after that. So be mindful as you make choices about what you want to have influence you through your auditory and your visual senses. Just be thoughtful about it. Make a conscious, intentional decision about the guna that you want to bring into yourself. And the last thing that's really influential is to eat a sattvic diet. So this would be a diet that is pure, that is organic, it is fresh. It's food that's not too spicy. It's just the right level of balance for your body and your dosha. And that's a whole nother big episode, eating a sattvic diet. But it's important for you to see that that's helpful as well. And I talked about that a little bit more in episode number 69. So you can go back and listen to that. There's also some spiritual keys to cultivating sattva. So if you are a person of a vata nature and you're experiencing rajasic type emotions like fear, nervousness, anxiety, and worry, what needs to happen is a cultivation of faith in God and higher power, cultivation of faith in your higher self, and ability to overcome challenges. Faith is the antidote to fear. You can't have both of them existing in the same space at the same time. So as your sattvic qualities emerge, your fear kind of shrinks away, and there's space for the light of faith. So this can look different for different people, but it's a good thing to meditate on if you tend towards those vata type of emotions. People with a pitta nature who experience rajasic emotions like anger, resentment, envy, jealousy, criticism, judgment, they need to let go of judgment to overcome their challenges. So being in that space where you think that one person is maybe better than another, one person's success in life is better than another's, then you're not allowing each person to have a soul that grows, learns, and evolves. You're kind of pigeonholing them in your mind into either good or bad, right or wrong. And so when we learn that each person's not yet finished, right? We're a work in progress. We can have some patience, and everyone is working towards the same goal of sattvic evolution. And so it's okay for them to have challenges, and they should have challenges. And that's their journey of growth. And we can see and observe and love through that without judgment. So when you have a clear vision and you are able to let go of judgment for a pitta, the anger will dissolve because there's understanding. How can you be angry with someone when you understand who they are and where they're coming from? Now, a person of a kapha nature who experiences rajasic emotions like desire and attachment, they have to learn to see through material things, the illusion that all is physical. Kapas tend to love comfort and comfort things. So as soon as they can see through the fact that that's not just the only reality, then they can have a higher way of being. So they want to cultivate fire. Kapas need a little heat, a little fire under them to get them going. This will help to reveal truth. It'll burn away illusion. They'll be able to see things clearly. Then they want to cultivate air element. This will help them to non-attach. So it's really important for a kapha to let go of what's holding them back. And you might not even know what it is. There might be a subtle awareness to it. So it's a good thing to think about and meditate on. So when you look at all of these gunas, how they interact with one another, we realize that all of us have mental disease. For us to categorize one person as having more mental disease than another is not a sattvic way to be, because every person is working towards a higher evolved state of mind. And this state of mind has everything to do with how our subtle doshas and our physical doshas work. That's why we can work to be balanced and healing from the physical plane or from the mental plane. And so as you're cultivating some of these practices, they're not new things to you. You know that you meditate and you'll feel better, that you do yoga, you'll feel better, you get out in nature, you'll feel better. But perhaps knowing that it's influencing your gunas and your state of consciousness and that evolution gives you a little more motivation to make it happen in your day. As you go about this next week, enjoy paying attention. How are you reacting to stress? Maybe even keep a stress journal. That would be really useful to just write down, here's the stressor. Here's how I responded to it. This was rajasic, sattvic, tamasic. Here's how I looked at it. And then we're going to work over time to evolve. It's all about evolution. If you're ready to join in this progressive evolution, we have a new immersion group that's starting next week. And so we begin these immersion groups at the beginning of the month. Love for you to join me. It's our 28-day program. We go through diet and sleep and exercise and look at everything from an Ayurvedic standpoint to achieve balance. It's really fun too. Lots of live calls and interaction. So you can learn more about the 28-day immersion at ayurvedalifeschool.com/ayurvedaimmersion. And I wanted to just side note, we have a lot of members in the immersion groups that are not in the Western Hemisphere. Totally works. Because the live calls are recorded, they're able to view them later and they can still be engaged with the Facebook group and ask questions and be involved. So if you are in that situation, please come and join us. We'd love to have you. Now, for those who have made it in through the immersion, we are in the middle of Scholars. The Ayurveda Scholars program is beautiful. I am loving the time that we're spending within that group. It's an annual program that you can join at any time, and it works through body, mind, and soul. Each month, we focus on a different aspect of Ayurveda. This month, we've been working on nutrition and a cleanse. Next month, we're working on the mind and healing emotions and creating a intentional future. And so as we look at different aspects of Ayurveda, it allows us to become very well-rounded and healthy from a holistic standpoint. Would love to have you join us in there. You can learn more at ayurvedalifeschool.com/ayurvedascholars. Have a beautiful day. We'll talk to you next week. Namaste.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it.
You can connect with me online at ayurvedalifeschool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.